Let's go!
New Fantasyland at Magic Kingdom. For the first time ever, dine in Beast's Castle. Go to new depths with Ariel's undersea adventure. Explore sprawling kingdoms and make memories that you'll never, never forget at the new Fantasyland.
Welcome, dreamers of all ages, to another episode of Unbuilt, an unrealized theme park podcast. With me today, as always, is my co-host, Ryan Dorman. How are you doing? Did you watch the Oscars?
I didn't.
You didn't? Just
I caught
me.
It on Twitter. At this point, it's so much more efficient because you don't have to listen to Jimmy Kimmel and all the hilarious, awesome jokes that they tell. Mm-hmm. So you just get to watch it all on Twitter and see people get angry and then go to bed and like have a social life and things like that.
What's so funny is like, so I wake up and I go to look at the winners and the losers and stuff like that. And like the immediate thing, people are like, ooh, another gaffe with the best picture, another gaffe. And I go, well, so what happened? Did they get the wrong one? No, it turns out Pacino just didn't read the nominees and instead just went for it. And then it turns out it was the producers to tell them to do that so the show would come in short.
I know that they did a lot of that. Like was it Best Song that also didn't announce like the nominees?
Oh, really?
They just went straight for it.
I didn't know that.
There was a song from, long story short, I think I remember reading that like Ariana Grande or something announced it and the writer of the, I feel like I was tricked. Hold on. I need to look it up. But anyways, it doesn't matter. Long story short is, they were trying to push this show to end early and it ended at like 10:30 Eastern time, which
That's
is insane.
Bad.
Yeah. 2.5 hours for the Oscars is like much better than it's been in the past. So
the viral clip that's going around is John Mulaney doing his monologue about Field of Dreams. And if John Mulaney hosts the Oscars, I would actually probably watch. I would watch.
You listen to Jimmy Kimmel's monologue and it was just an absolute travesty. But that's because Jimmy Kimmel's really boring. He had to do a whole part about how Trump was making fun of him. Thank God.
Well, that's the thing. They're like so scared of making any swings again. Even though that's when they get the most ratings, they're going to go for the safest option possible. And the safest option possible doesn't usually elicit super safe stuff because then you get the slap, which they're like, oh, we can't have Will Smith come back because it only gave us the highest ratings. And, you know, they're faking it. Like, come on, spice this thing up. Everybody should slap each other. I don't care.
There should have been more slaps. They should have had the Chris Rock and Will Smith come back this year so that Chris Rock could slap Will Smith back.
Lily Gladstone should have just slapped Emma Stone across the face.
I feel like Emma Stone definitely felt slapped. That's the one. I vaguely followed the award season, but that's like the one perhaps upset. It's like I saw Poor Things and I saw The Curse, and Emma Stone is like incredible in The
Curse.
She's
great in that. Oh
but
my
like,
gosh.
Poor Things, I was like, eh, come on.
I haven't seen Poor Things yet. It's on my list. And
it's on Disney Plus.
Nobody should be mad at Emma Stone for winning. It's not her fault. And blame the voters.
It's her fault. It's her fault specifically.
Yeah, she was like, Lily, I'm going to take this from you. You'll never get another chance again.
Yeah.
Well, that was our little Oscars wrap up. But we have a pretty big topic today. And if you've been dying to go back to a little Disney, do we have some Disney for you? This is one of the most Disney topics we've talked about in a long, long time. But really quickly before we get into it, did you see that Disneyland Forward is going, well, forward?
It's like one of those, well, wait till I see it. Let me see it. I got to see it. Because update me and the audience a little bit. I know that there were some public discussions about it.
So yesterday they had a preliminary meeting that the commission was going to vote on whether or not to send it to the city council. Needless to say, they voted near unanimously to send it to the city council, which will vote on the full approval on April 16th. Of course, Disneyland Forward is a plan to rezone multiple areas, including the Toy Story lot, the downtown Disney parking, as well as Disneyland Hotel parking, and rezone them for other purposes other than parking, so they could put maybe rides in there, but more likely one ride and more hotels and DVC. They also want to turn, and this is a good thing. I actually do like this. I hope no matter what this happens, they want to turn a cast member lot into a parking garage for cast members. And of course, they are seeking another crack at the Eastern Gateway project, and just like a bunch of things that they say will possibly lead to a massive expansion of the parks, but more likely will lead to some expansion of the parks and will then also lead to a bunch of, again, shopping, hotels, and a bunch of stuff that nobody cares about.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty like critical time for Disney right now is to reinstate or reinsure shareholders that they're on a positive direction. So there's a lot of promises about like, expansions across the globe, mm-hmm. Disneyland being one of the major spots there. So yeah. Like it's a good political move to announce that mm-hmm. Disney could potentially be expanding into the next 3 decades in Disneyland. But
it's true. And also the fact that they say they're ready to go on this project as soon as later this year. Now, what does that mean? This actually means a lot of infrastructure work will start on all the things that they need in order to expand these areas. No matter what, it doesn't matter if these areas are attractions, whether or not they're shops, no matter what, they have to put in infrastructure in order to do these things. So in order to not have parking in the downtown Disney, they need to add parking elsewhere and add more cast member parking and so on. You'll see that happen later this year, but hopefully maybe there's more, but they have yet to even pick up their finger and start working on that Avengers e-ticket. So who knows? Who knows? Mm-hmm. Also, they listed, you want to give a crack at what is the 3 buildings considered historical landmarks at Disneyland? I'll let you guess.
Yeah, I remember reading about, I heard that they were rediscussing this, so I actually don't know the 3. So the 3 build on Disneyland Resort property, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, honestly, I would imagine probably...
It's actually 4, but three that are relevant in the park itself.
Maybe the train station, the castle, and It's a Small World?
You got 2. You got 1 of those right.
Okay, the train, I got 1 right.
Okay, the train station and the other 2 are going to go from... Okay, I guess I could see that too. What? The train station... The Pirates of the Caribbean building and Hungry Bear restaurant. Those are the 3 historical landmarks. I don't know why.
So wait, does that mean Disney can't change Hungry Bear? Like they could.
It means they can, but they have to go through like so much paperwork in order to do that with the city.
Why Hungry Bear?
I don't know.
It could be like that maybe. I don't know. Like it's grandfathered in with like some building design.
Maybe, I guess. I don't know.
Like that, like it would be unsafe to build that building today, but now they have it like, oh, it's grandfathered in. There's no ownership problems now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's absurd. That's so, okay. Well, I guess Haunted Mansion Q does not count in that list. Right.
So. Because that's been, it has been down to dirt. Down to dirt. Yeah. Okay, well... do you have anything else to say about Disneyland Forward before we move on to the main topic?
I mean, unfortunately, I think that the big benefit of Disneyland Forward is that Disney's cult of personality, which I'm not trying to be that antagonistic, but Disney's cult of personality guarantees that anytime they announce a semblance of a plan to do anything, it becomes like the hot topic of discussion mm-hmm. on social media. And it's like great advertising. I'd love to see Disney expand Disneyland, and like the plans that they proposed looked like they might have something interesting to go onto mm-hmm. them. But the cynic in me says that right now, when Disney's facing a weird hostile bid for takeover.
Oh, God.
It's probably incredibly. Yeah, I mean, the Nelson Peltz, like, I don't know if you saw that that attack ad that they put that someone, I think it was Disney, put out against not Disney themselves, of course, but like some kind of a privately funded group in favor of current Disney management.
Yeah.
Put out in favor of the Iger administration, a weird thing to call it. Against
and then Peltz had to come out and say, I will not try to fire Bob Iger if I do come in. He had to actually come out and say it because it was so his attack is so aggressive. He has to come out and say, well, I wouldn't fire Bob Iger. I'm not a maniac. Well, it's like, all right,
which
whatever.
Is surprising because you'd think that would be the main goal.
Yeah.
Not that the shareholders at Disney are really worth their weight in pennies, but.
Well, it's funny you should say that about the activist investor scheme, because one of the people involved with that is actually part of our topic today.
That's right.
He is. And we'll get into that. But for now, let us slide over to some fantastical unbuilt properties.
The curse on New Fantasyland had been broken. Everyone in the Magic Kingdom was overjoyed. Except...
When I rule this place, things might not be so happily ever after. Ariel, trust me. In my version, the octopus wins. And Belle, maybe that tale as old as time needs a new twist. Ah, but you're perfect just the way you are. Stay angry, my friend. Save it. Soon they'll all know why. I'm called the Evil Queen.
Experience Disney storytelling like never before. In New Fantasyland at the Walt Disney World Resort. Discover all the new wonders at findingfantasyland.com.
Seriously?
All right, here we are. Main topic time. We are talking about the original New Fantasyland. And while this topic is not much, it is still like the history and why we got to this is so hysterically fascinating and is the probably the most crass synergistic proposal I've ever seen in regards to the parks. And that's saying something. We lived through Disney Afternoon Avenue, but I think this project probably is the grossest one imaginable. When you go to Disney, Magic Kingdom, or Disneyland, how often do you go to Fantasyland?
So that's a great question. Very infrequently, because it's a more frequently recently, but because it's such a crowd nightmare, because that's where the little kids go, right? That's like the spot of the park, pretty much on all four parks, where you can drop a 2-year old. That's where you could, they're the most interested. But I suppose like if I'm there, I'm not going to not go to Fantasyland.
I mean, you went to Fantasyland for sure, because obviously you had to experience it in Tokyo.
Yes.
Right. And that's the weirdest Fantasyland, because you want to go experience the Haunted Mansion. That's where you go.
Their Fantasyland is like, I mean, everything, it feels like it's trapped in the 70s, right? But it's like a very flat area that's like, here are all these things that are don't really have a definitive spot for them to go. It's the Magic Kingdom's Fantasyland, to me, that is the most, it almost is like a daycare sometimes, I think, because it's so... It's so busy and so packed, and it's such a central spot. But it's also the big draw of Fantasyland, and part of the reason why this unbuilt attraction is so important is that it is like the most universal part of the park.
Correct.
If you think Disney, you think Pinocchio, Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella, Snow White, et cetera,
The castle.
Exactly.
I mean, the castle.
Right, exactly.
Like after Walt passed away, what's interesting is, I mean, the castle was a big part of, like, The Wonderful World of Color and the Disneyland TV show, because, you know, they were promoting Disneyland. That's a whole, you know, central thesis of that. But after Walt passed away, sort of over time, and especially through when Eisner took over and they redid the Disney Pictures logo with, you know, the castle and the famous theme. that became synonymous with Disney, the entire company. So this is really the heart of the Disney company is right here. Not only does this display their most famous properties, which are the animated properties, and depending on which fantasy land you go to, the unfortunate live action remake properties, but this really is, you know, what people also think about when they think of Disneyland is probably Fantasyland. I mean, yeah, sure, some people will think of, you know, Space Mountain and stuff like that. But this is, you know, as kids, especially, you know, what you gravitate towards, the Peter Pans, the dark rides, Dumbo. What else? You know, I guess Small World for sure. Am I misremembering anything?
In Fantasyland?
Yeah. Like, what else, I mean, those is, like, are super famous? Like, the carousel. Duh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mad Tea Party.
Mm-hmm. Those two are, like, the definitive. The spinning teacups is, like, I don't know if it's as iconic an image today, perhaps, maybe, as it used to be, but it certainly is one of the quintessential Magic Kingdom attractions.
Yeah. And when I go to Disneyland now, I find myself usually just passing through Disneyland. It's usually Fantasyland. It's like, you know, a throughway to get to other lands. But I won't pass up an opportunity to ride Mr. Toad. I love Mr. Toad. I rode Snow White because it was brand new to me, the new Enchanted Wish. Try to avoid Peter Pan as much as possible, which is the worst queue in the history of anything because it's slow and the ride is like 80 seconds long. It's not worth it to me. Oh, is it worth it to you? Or
define worth it.
How long would you wait for it?
I don't think there's, like, very many attractions in Fantasyland that I would wait more than 25 minutes for.
Okay, so there. Okay, I would not wait more than 15.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean,
yeah.
It's, I don't know if you're, like, comparing it to more thrilling experiences in the park, perhaps.
I would definitely wait 20 for Mr. Toad.
You would wait 20 minutes. It's, like, incredibly unique because it's like an old school schlocky carnival attraction that's found its way into Disneyland. It is great. It's amazing.
I wouldn't wait more than 5 minutes for Pinocchio. But
you've done the relatively new Snow White attraction.
Yeah, I said last time.
That's what I was going to say.
And again, that was 10 minute wait. So I was fine with that. Yeah. But it was raining. That also kind of sucked, but whatever. But the point I'm saying is that, you know, as both you and me we're both over 20 years old. So the fact is that Fantasyland really isn't for us, but it's steeped in our memories for sure. Anybody who's a theme park fan, it has to be steeped in their memories. Nobody really rarely becomes a theme park fan after, you know, they reach 20 years old. Usually it's a childhood thing. And what really sticks out to me about it is I don't think Fantasyland really, to me, is about meeting characters. It's more about riding these cute, whimsical rides, right? That has to be it, you know?
It's simple and accessible and
not too scary. Yeah.
Not too scary. Very, like, though any of the scary ones are incidentally scary. Like, the actual attraction itself are simple.
Yeah.
Perhaps if you were young on Snow White's Scary Adventures, maybe you think that that is more...
now both of them are no more the Scary Adventure version. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So, tier. Is it still in Tokyo as Scary Adventures? I think it might be. Yeah.
I think it is. I'm almost certain it is because I think I went on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess you can get it there. But Jules, let's think about it. What if some child's Fantasyland was not about rides at all, but instead standing in a lot of meet and greets? Because that was the dream of Jay Rasulo, who is currently buddy buddies with Nelson Peltz trying to get back on Disney's board of investors in a proxy fight. But at one time he was pushing this, but we got to go way back. We're going to go way, way, way back because the story of Fantasyland is one of princesses of animation and of pretzel dark rides. This specific topic mostly focuses on Magic Kingdom. So let's get a really quick rundown of how we got to this this specific place right back to the beginning. As we discussed on the Frontier Worlds episode, there was the Disneyland TV show that Walt used to show off his family fun park. There were segments based on Frontierland, Tomorrowland, and of course, Fantasyland. And that's where Walt's animated movies would quote unquote live, and people could meet Cinderella, or, well, Cinderella wasn't a thing yet. I guess it would be Snow White, Peter Pan, and Alice in Wonderland. The idea was to put guests on adventures where they were the main character. So you would never see the main character in these rides. Unlike now you see them in there, but those were later additions. But you would travel as Snow White on a minecart, fly as Peter Pan on a pirate ship, and drive a jalopy as Mr. Toad. You were in their POV. Mr. Toad was originally a roller coaster, which was cut last minute and made into a dark ride because of budget constraints. Included were a carousel, because that's, of course, where Walt's little Griffith Park story stemmed from. A teacup flat ride based on Walt's recently released Alice in Wonderland. There was the Storybook Circus water ride, originally a plain moat while miniatures are being created, which was going to be originally part of Lilliputian Land. Speaking of unbuilt attractions, you were going to be down to the size of a little miniature. It was going to be very cute. And in this, you were going to be very large. Casey Jr. was also intended on being a coaster, and a Dumbo spinner, which were both from Dumbo. Also a theater, as this was supposed to be the headquarters for the Mickey Mouse Club. The three main rides were state-of-the-art at the time, made with bus bar technology by Aerodynamics, but no real better than dark rides from a local carnival. Lots of flat usage of quick movie bus bars and black lights, and you can see photos in the show notes of the Fantasyland from there. Very colorful and bright. It was themed to a medieval fair atmosphere with lots of colorful Renaissance tents, because that's all Walt could afford at that time, to be like in this castle courtyard area. Over time, Alice in Wonderland is added, along with Skull Rock and Captain Hook's pirate ship. At the far end, Small World is added from the World's Fair. The Matterhorn also eventually becomes part of it. And of course, it is very, very popular. Now, some say it's Walt's favorite land, but a lot of people thought Walt, again, hated how cheap it was. So Walt dies, of course, and in the late 60s, early 70s, Magic Kingdom is the thing now, as they're trying to get their heads around this Epcot concept, and they bought all these acres in Florida. Walt is really unsure of what to do in Fantasyland. Should they copy what Walt had done or do something new? The Imagineers really wanted to do something new, so they called for three new dark rides: Ichabod and Sleepy Hollow next to Haunted Mansion as a transition point, Mary Poppins, possibly the Baxter idea, it's unknown, and Sword of the Stone. So those were going to be those three dark rides. There was also rumored to be a Cinderella dark ride or a Sleeping Beauty dark ride in the castle itself. Small World would also be included elsewhere along with Dumbo, but otherwise it would be a brand new Fantasyland. Well, Royal Disney slashed the budget for Fantasyland, encouraging the Imagineers to instead produce high-capacity variants of the West Coast dark rides. The only new attraction that was greenlit is the Mickey Mouse Revue animatronic show, which, after Bill Justice's enthusiastic pitch, Roy thought Walt would have loved it wholeheartedly. Are you familiar with the Mickey Mouse Revue?
I am familiar with the Mickey Mouse Revue. The end.
Oh, well, of course you would know that that's where the three Caballero animatronics went. Once Epcot finally threw them in there, it was at Tokyo for 30 years till it was replaced with PhilharMagic. It is a very strange show, needless to say, and it only lasted there like 10 years. Originally, the idea of Fantasyland and the Magic Kingdom was that of a medieval circus atmosphere leading to a Bavarian village. Mr. Toad, Peter Pan, and Snow White were included, but plussed up and had upgrades. Toad and Snow White had their show directors take an auteur route, since Roy only cared that they were from the existing parks. Toad was doubled into a two two-track design with Rolly Crump leading the way with lots of black light and whimsical designs. The cars would even interact in a town square scene in the middle of the ride. Snow White's Scary Adventures was led by Claude Coates, who wanted to create his own version of a spooky Bill Tracy dark ride filled with numerous terrifying scenes with the witch. If you look at any video of this ride from before 1994, this original version, and I know, Dorman, you were too young to have experienced it, and so was I. I never got to experience this version, but so you can only really see it on video, but pretty much it's very dark, the videos, and you just see the witch, and the witch just comes out and screaming, so it's just watching this darkness and then like a sprite of light and some the witch going, and like, that's it. So like cackling laughter, like over and over and over again. And it ends with the witch killing you. Like a rock comes down and kills you. And that's how it ends. It was wild. It is amazing. Peter Pan's flight stayed relatively the same with one addition, an extra bench to each pirate ship to extend capacity. It's a Small World took over the intended Ichabod Crane spot, featuring heavy boats and an indoor station and flutter route that creates a bigger sense of depth if in the cruise, but it kind of somewhat vanquished the intimacy of the original attraction. Of course, we have Dumbo, but also a covered version of the Mad Tea Party because of all those Florida rains. Finally, to cap off Fantasyland was their version of Disneyland's Submarine Voyage based off the film 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea with the subs themed to the Nautilus. This is the coolest thing, I think, in this original Fantasyland. Like, I don't care who you are. That sub design is cool. I like it. And of course, a Skyway hovers above it all. Did you like this? Do you like this crop of original Fantasyland rides, or do you think it's missing anything?
Well, the 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea one is a very interesting choice for Fantasyland, I think. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say what it's missing because Fantasyland's identity is very odd. Like, let's say you step away from the medieval kind of Renaissance fair like they did in the beginning. Fantasyland is just a place where movies about magic and exciting new things, science fiction, science fantasy in the case of 20,000, but also just fantastical magic stories like Snow White. But it's not like unified. It's incredibly ununified. There's no like sense of place. It's kind of like hopping from booth to booth. In fact, the fact that many of the attractions are inspired in structure by like Carny attractions or maybe better than Carnival, but like local theme park attractions, I should say, is unsurprising. This is like a sideshow of your favorite movies, your favorite characters, your favorite experiences.
That is very true. There is no unified theme. It's just a bunch of different adventures based off of Disneyana, I guess you would say. Back on the West Coast, the dark rides in Fantasyland were faltering. And so the 1980s brought upon a new Fantasyland with new facades, dark ride upgrades, and even a new ride. The Mickey Mouse Clubhouse Theater was removed to make way for Pinocchio's Daring Journey. All the tents in the area were changed over into something similar to the Magic Kingdom of Bavarian Village. New Fantasyland resembled something more akin to Tivoli Gardens rather than a cheap carnival atmosphere. Imagineers like Tony Baxter felt awful about it, but it was definitely a plus in the end. By the way, if you're watching Saving Mr. Banks, you can be a really annoying person and point out to your friends that Walt never stepped into the Fantasyland depicted in the film since that backdrop wouldn't exist in 1983. So look at that in Main Street. Great moments of Mr. Lincoln is in the background. That wouldn't exist in 1961. Or look at that. Pinocchio's Daring Journey is in the background. That didn't exist in 1961. So this is a really fun little game you can play during this scene.
At parties.
Yeah.
When you're at parties with your friends and they're all watching Saving Mr. Banks for some reason.
It's like, I really am into watching John Lee Hancock biopics. We got The Blind Side and we got The Founder. And now let's put on some good old fashioned Saving Mr. Banks. And you're just like, wow, isn't Tom Hanks just so charming? Hey, wait a second. That facade didn't exist back then. Okay, we're getting distracted. Magic Kingdom's Fantasyland itself would see ever-evolving changes over the years. Snow White's scary adventures would be transformed into a more kid-friendly version with more of Snow White in it and less of the witch, destroying Claude's vision because, well, Magic Kingdom isn't supposed to scare kids. Ironically, the same year they did that, they opened Alien Encounter. Womp womp. 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea closed supposedly for a refurb that same year, only to never return as the lagoon sat empty for ages. And a huge controversy occurred when Mr. Toad's Wild Ride was shuttered in 1998 to make way for The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, a downgraded version of Tokyo's Pooh's Honey Hunt, and that involved Toadins. Do you know about Toadins?
No, I don't know about Toadins.
Those were the protests that people held to save Mr. Toad in the theme parks.
History rhymes with itself. Although, unfortunately, they didn't piss on the walls with their toddler. So. Oh. Not nearly as dedicated. In front of the poo
walls?
Exactly.
That would be the thing. Instead, right they were there. Poo. They pooed.
It was right there for them. Yeah.
I'll show you a poo. Yeah. I'm trying really hard. Oh, security's coming.
Just know that proper parenting is getting your kid to whip their dick out and piss on the theme park ride.
But no, they didn't actually do it. It's just a joke. They're just being extremely immature and totally not racist. This is not about racism. Yeah.
No.
Not about
anyone
racism.
Anyone listening to this, like my dad is going to listen to this and be like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Dorman's dad, somebody did a photo op where they were pretending to have their kid piss on the Tiana's Bayou Adventure construction walls because they're really, really mad about Splash Mountain being rethemed. Isn't that dandy? And now everybody else who doesn't have the context knows too. Congratulations. Mm. So moving back. In 1988, an unused corner next to Fantasyland became Mickey's Birthday Land, which then turned into Mickey's Starland. Essentially, it was supposed to be a temporary new land where guests could meet Mickey for his 60th birthday. While it proved way too popular, the entire thing stayed until 1996, where for Walt Disney World's 25th anniversary, it was turned into Mickey's Toontown Fair, modeled off of Mickey's Toontown from Disneyland, which opened in 1993. Along this was to be included a new roller coaster called Goofy's Barnstormer. I've only rode the Barnstormer once and don't remember much about it.
It'll break your back.
Yeah.
No, I think it was one of the first roller coasters I went on as a kid.
Were you scared of it?
Of course I was. I don't think I stopped being afraid of roller coasters really until this year. And even then, I still think I'm pretty terrified of them.
In 1999, also the Sky Ride closed for good. Tear. Well, now we're going to switch away from Fantasyland and go elsewhere in the company, where the new president of Disney Consumer Products, Andy Mooney, attends a Disney on Ice show in the early 2000s. There he sees numerous little girls dressed in hand-stitched princess costumes and commingling with each other. A light bulb in his head goes off. Is Disney losing money by not launching a Disney princess franchise with their own dedicated costume line? Well, Roy E. Disney was against this, preferring the old-fashioned way where everything stays in its own lane. Snow White does not know Princess Aurora, and Princess Jasmine does not do tea with Ariel and Belle. Michael Eisner took note of that and then looked at the financial projections from Mooney and said to Roy,
"Future's now, old man."
Roy O. Disney, E. Disney would have loved Wreck-It Ralph. He would have loved Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Aw. When did he die? 2009, just right before it, right?
Wait, not before Ralph breaks the internet. That's what I mean, the classic scene.
No. Roy E. Disney died in like 2009.
But Ralph Breaks the Internet came out years later.
I know that, but he died. Okay,
he's dead.
Yeah. He died long before even Wreck-It Ralph. The original Princess line consisted of Snow White, Cinderella, Tinkerbell, Esmeralda, Aurora, Ariel, Belle, Pocahontas, Jasmine, and Mulan. Esmeralda and Tinkerbell were quickly thrown out because they aren't, you know, princesses. To be fair, Mulan is barely a princess. In its first year, the Princess franchise earned $300 million. Okay, this is in 2001, by the way. Something happened at the end of 2001 that hindered the economy a little bit. It was called 9/11, and this franchise still earned $300 million by the end of it. And it just kept increasing more and more. Dolls, costumes, brushes, tiaras, books, coloring sets, playsets, games, oh, you name it, they sold it. Jane from Tarzan and Kida from Atlantis briefly joined. Jane? What? But were soon dropped. The first permanent new addition was Tiana in 2010, with Rapunzel following in 2011, Merida in 2013, Moana was added in 2019, and Raya in 2022. Remember Raya and the Last Dragon?
No, actually, I did not remember that movie. That's insane. I saw that movie.
Yeah, wow. Me too. And I barely remember it.
I don't think Disney remembers it. Frankly, I was just in Disney World and I didn't see that once. That is amazing. You know how much Wish stuff they had, though? Oh, my goodness.
Oh, I went to Five cleaning Below. I went to Five Below the other week. So much Wish merch. So much.
You do not want to hear a sentence about your recent movies starting with, I just went to Five Below.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyways, we're getting ahead of ourselves. What does this have to do with Fantasyland? Well, in 2006, Disney Consumer Products carved out a small space in the world of Disney at Downtown Disney to become Bippity Boppity Boutique, and reservations went so quick it would make your head spin. The very next year, the concept was trotted out at the Magic Kingdom in Cinderella Castle and was just as equally popular. In this space, little girls can get pricey makeovers to look just like their favorite princess. In addition, this made lines for princesses expand to unimaginable lengths and more merch to fly off the shelves. Neither you and me have been to Bippity Boppity Boutique, but
I don't think so.
It is insane how popular it apparently is, despite the prices. Like,
yeah,
I guess.
Well, I was just gonna say, I think it's funny. I grew up, so of course I was born in 2000. So when I was coming to like age of consciousness,
yeah,
Disney princesses were just like the de facto toy for like the girls' toy, I guess. One might say. But like, it is shocking to me to learn that that is relatively a recent development, that this wasn't like an aggressive push until the early 2000s. I mean, I naturally believe that there must have been some overlap, right? I heard that they were selling princess toys before that.
Yeah.
It seems like the big merchandise boom happened within the past. Now, I guess you'd say 25 years, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's so nuts. Apparently, all of this... This Bippity Boppity Boutique thing, like, this led to like Club Libby Lou, which was also like a little kid's salon.
My and, sibling's birthday was there a couple of times.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was one. It was that there was one, I think, in one of those or like something adjacent in like Lancaster, Pennsylvania or something like that. Or just some kind of like outdoor shopping center. Yeah, that was big, really popular. Like when I was young and in daycare, the girls would do that for their birthdays.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So not only is this happening, but remember when we said that Tinkerbell was thrown out of the princess line? Well, that's because she started in her own franchise in 2005, the Disney Fairies. And this franchise expands Tink's world in Pixie Hollow, located at the heart of Neverland. It was intended on going after girls growing out of the princess line, with chapter books and direct-to-video films, six of them being two TV specials, fulfilling the lore and narrative as they sell many, many dolls. And I mean many.
Ever wonder where fairies come from? It's Disney Fairies Tink and Friends. You can make Tinkerbell and her fairy friends, Silver Mist, Rosetta, Iridesa, fly with the Pixie Power Wand. Tink and Friends and Pixie Power Wand each sold separately, batteries not included.
Like there are so many characters. I remember I went to the, and this will come up later, the first D23 Expo, which I attended, and I attended the animation panel with Lotso hugging Lasseter doing the presentation. And I remember he started talking, all these direct-to-video films, the CGI Tinkerbell films, they're all done by like Disney Toon Studios.
Yeah.
And he went to talk about like the newest Tinkerbell movie, and you could just feel the energy of the room like come to a screeching halt. It was so funny just how like everybody just kind of like the energy went out of the room because nobody cared about these things because they're aimed at 6-year-olds. So anyways, they have all these books, these videos, and so many dolls. And I'm about to show you a Wikipedia article for reoccurring characters in the franchise. And this is the entire list. Look how long this list is.
Holy shit.
Oh my God. There are so many characters in this. I guess this has to be like 30 characters.
These are the recurring characters. These are the characters in the films with voice actors.
Yes, Holy, that is correct. These are the characters with voice actors. This also technically includes the main characters because like Tinkerbell is in here. I checked. I was like, is Tinkerbell even in here? Yeah, she is. And I was like, oh my God, this Wikipedia page is so long because there are also the characters only found in the books. And look how long this list is. It's like another 30 characters.
I thought kids didn't like homework. Like, what is up with so many children's like material and properties being like more studying than they are?
I know they are, it's like actually doing like characters in the book, major non-fairy characters are like 7 of those, and then fairies there's like 7 of those, and then like other fairies include, and there's like a list of like 30 fairies.
I think that like at some point people just like Wikipedia pages.
Yeah,
like you when you're just a kid, adding to Wikipedia pages. Everything. Yeah, the lore stuff. Give him credit. John Lasseter was a weird pervert and freak. You could really make properties, well, or steal from interns, properties that were incredibly marketable.
Yes. I'm sure that the Tinkerbell franchise was like, this is a real great money sector. And he wasn't just like, oh, I wish I could hug Tinkerbell.
Oh, my goodness.
I have her in the part.
My goodness. Oh, my goodness. Is this, this sounds like, is this libel? Like, can we be arrested for this?
Oh, who cares? He's not doing anything important except for, I don't know, making Netflix animated films now, which is terrific. Just, yeah, that is correct. Yes, he went to Skydance and just entered a deal with Netflix, and now those films are going straight to Netflix. So, congratulations. He is now, the Netflix shoved Alex Hirsch out, and they welcomed Lasseter in. Come here, John Lasseter. We're buddies now. This is just great. We live in hell. Anyways, in 2008, Disneyland added a Pixie Hollow meet and greet area, replacing Ariel's Grotto in between Tomorrowland and Fantasyland. I do not know if that is still there. Honestly, it is still there. I'm almost certain
it's still there.
I thought they removed it, but apparently they didn't. I don't remember seeing it last time, but maybe I'm just not looking for it. But it is insane if it still exists in 2024. Magic Kingdom also added a mini Pixie Hollow. Do you remember this? Nestled in one of the tents of Mickey's Toontown Fair.
Well, that one I don't remember.
Okay, apparently you don't remember.
It's still in Disneyland app, by the way, the Pixie Hollow thing.
All right. Okay. I guess so. So you would go into, you know, where the Pete Silly sideshow is now?
That, yes.
That's what they used. So they used it. It was like a test. And it went like, there was like 3-hour lines to see these 5 characters. And it's clearly 5 college girls dressed up as one is Tinkerbell and the 4 others are Shrug. Somebody, I guess if somebody's a fan of these franchises, they would know. All I remember in my research is I think one of them's named Dawn, and I don't know the others. I'm sorry. The head of Disney Parks at the time, Jay Rasulo, again, currently trying to get back on the Disney Board of Investors in a proxy battle, saw all of this fairy and princess commotion, turned to the Imagineers to propose a Fantasyland expansion that would expand on these revenue centers, a chance to meet the characters in exciting, immersive areas. So at the D23 convention, the very first one in 2009, Jay Rasulo announced the biggest expansion in Magic Kingdom history, New Fantasyland, to be open in phases from 2011 to 2013. The expansion would see nearly the entirety of the current Fantasyland left alone, with the exception of moving Dumbo. So they would move Dumbo elsewhere. Everything else would be walled in as the castle courtyard, and guests can then venture out and explore the enchanted forest. Heading on the left, guests could encounter things they're probably familiar with. The Be Our Guest restaurant, Enchanted Tales with Belle Meet and Greet show, and the Little Mermaid Omnimover dark ride that was also being built at Disney's California Adventure. Okay, I think it's called Under the Sea. It's like Tale of the Little Mermaid or something like that. I think the DCA one is called Ariel's Undersea Adventure or the Little Mermaid Ariel's Undersea. I do not know.
I was literally just looking at it on Wikipedia. This is so sad.
Yeah.
This is the classic, like when Disney announces an attraction and they have this massive name.
Is it called Under the Sea Journey of the Little Mermaid? Is that it?
It's called The Little Mermaid Ariel's Undersea Adventure.
That's at Disney's California Adventure.
That's correct. There's, and then Under the Sea, The Journey of the Little Mermaid is Walt Disney right. World.
Okay, yeah, perfect. Okay.
Good for you.
Yeah. Why aren't they the same name? Who knows? However, the right-hand side was just a bit different. Two more experiences were to be had for meet and greets. A Cinderella experience where guests see a special get effect, probably with Pepper's ghost, where they see the fairy godmother turn her dress transforming from rags to the elegant ball gown we all know today. And this, apparently they did the playtesting for this, and like the special effects is really cool. That's per Jim Hill. Guests would then do interactive activities to help her get ready for the ball before stepping into the castle ballroom and dance a meet and greet with Cinderella, with boys posing as junior knights, which is so funny. Like, there's like, well, we have to have something for boys to do. A bizarre idea would have guests meet Princess Aurora in her house and make cards for the sweet 16 birthday that she missed due to her being in a coma. Grim, that is so weird. That is why?
Chuck E. Cheese's orphanage birthday thing. That's like, what an incredibly morbid way.
He always wanted a birthday. Next to these meet and greets would be a small 100-acre wood mini land. And what I didn't say is that the 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea Lagoon was turned into the Pooh's Playful Spot. So this would be retained, but turned into a meet and greet where guests could meet Pooh and Tigger. Some more meet and greets. On the far right, Mickey's Toontown Fair would be demolished and split in half. The right side would become Dumbo Circus with the dueling Dumbos, but the Barnstormer transformed into a carnival-looking roller coaster. So again, this is the same thing with the Dumbo side by side, but the Barnstormer would have, you know, more of a like a California Screamin' feel. The final aspect of this land was not only to replace but expand beyond Toontown Fair, which again was a full Pixie Hollow. And it looks very nice in the artwork, except that there was going to be no ride. This expansive mini-land would have guests shrink down to the size of a fairy and be able to explore a giant tree and meet all the fairies from the Disney Fairies franchise. Again, no ride, just a very extensive, pretty meet and greet. So, what are your thoughts on this?
So, like, I feel like we've covered vaguely similar things, not to this exactly in the past. Mm-hmm. The abundance of meet and greets, right? Like, I think we were very disappointed, right, when Mary Poppins' attraction was joined to just be a meet and greet, seemingly, but potentially a little dark ride.
Yeah, a little flat ride, yeah.
Yeah, so this obviously has even less than that.
Mm-hmm.
It, to me, and like you kind of started this in the beginning, I'm very curious because I know you seem to have very negative opinions on this.
Oh, okay.
No, I mean, I do too. To me, this is like the purest synergy board meeting design ever. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, well, kids like meet and greets. Kids like princesses. This expansion is entirely just meet and greets and princesses. That said, I don't have a proclivity for the princesses myself, but I did like the one that's currently there.
Enchanted Tales with Belle?
That's correct.
Now, I haven't done that. And I do have a point I'm making. I'm not dissing the ideas of all these individually. Mm-hmm. My problem is, why are there so many of these?
There's so many.
This would have five extended immersive meet and greets. Five.
But don't you think that, like, while it's not appealing, so the two of us are very ride focused, right? And then maybe secondary themed area focus, right? And then maybe tertiary to that, food focused, right? So at the very bottom, seemingly, are meet and greets.
Meet and greets.
So, but I did go to Epcot. And I did have a chance to see the Figment meet and greet.
How long did you wait?
I didn't wait for it. I just looked at it.
Okay.
Because it's in that main room. I thought it was in like a different room, but it's in the main room now. Maybe it always was and I just misunderstood. But like the line was massive and it didn't stop. And I don't think they were even giving the guy breaks, Figment breaks. Mm-hmm. So these meet and greet attractions are incredibly popular.
Okay.
And it's like, even the one that's like, what is it? Elsa and Anna and Cinderella are the two permanent meet and greets in Fantasyland right now in Magic Kingdom.
I thought that you can only meet Elsa and Anna at Epcot.
Am I wrong? Because I know that there's a two. I don't think. Maybe. I know that there is a two princess meet and greet. One that's always on rotation. Yes. And then Cinderella.
Yes. That's a princess fairy tale hall, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
And I totally get what you're saying here. Here's my problem with it, is that meet and greets have their place at the Disney park. They're incredibly popular, and I won't deny that. However, if you're using this much space and this much real estate just to go for one very narrow demographic, because I'm going to have to say that meet and greets are enjoyed by a good decent amount, but everybody goes to a theme park for rides. This is not an intelligent use of space at all. And as impressive as Enchanted Tales with Belle, and I think the Cinderella one would have maybe be almost as impressive, but you start to reach diminishing returns with you're making cards for Princess Aurora meeting Pooh and Tigger in the 100-acre wood. And then I guess maybe the Pixie Hollow thing, it could have been impressive, but it's all very short-term thinking and it's also completely against what the majority of guests are coming to there for. They are like, oh, well, you expanded Fantasyland. That's great. Where are all the rides? Well, there's not many rides, but there are a lot of experiences where you get to meet your favorite characters. No. Meeting your favorite characters should be at the side of an attraction. And again, Enchanted Tales with Belle, very impressive. But wouldn't you rather have the Tokyo ride?
Yes, you're right. The problem, so like obviously we're speaking with a lot of hindsight, especially given what's built now. And like you'll talk in a little bit about kind of what the thought process was in shifting away from this idea. Excuse me. There are a lot of meet and greets, but you can kind of understand like a little bit of where they're coming from. Fantasyland is it's a very difficult place to build attractions for, at least if you wanted to keep the integrity of I have to look at the future show notes. Pre-2000 update, 2012, 2014. The integrity of that Fantasyland was like incredibly accessible, simple things for children. Like there was nothing pre-2014 that a toddler couldn't do, if I'm correct.
Which is
a far cry from the rest of the park. You know, every other area of the park has things that might be a little bit scary or a little bit difficult. You know, Tomorrowland especially is where the kids are going to do very little, except for Buzz Lightyear, right? But I think that you can almost taste like, well, what if we just can completely suck all of these people into these massive lines? Because the meet and greet lines that's the one thing I don't understand about them myself. Maybe I would get it if I was a kid, but I don't get why people would wait 90 minutes for one of these things, but they do routinely hit that. Mickey Mouse is incredibly popular.
They do. I know the
town hall.
Yeah, I absolutely get that. But you shouldn't be wasting this much space over it.
Right. No, that's a good point. Yeah. Insofar as like this space is like half the park.
exactly.
Like it was, what, this previously the lagoon, right? It was, the thought was, let's turn this massive lagoon into a bunch of isolated meet and greets.
Yes, yes.
No, that is a isolated meet and greets, and well, so actually, maybe I'm reading through this and thinking about it. To quote you, heading to the left, guests could encounter the Be Our Guest restaurant, Enchanted Tales with Belle, Little Mermaid Omni Mover.
Yeah, that was, by the way, the one ride.
So maybe it would be helpful to keep talking about what happens actually.
Yes, indeed. 4 months after this announcement, Tom Staggs was replaced as CFO with Jay Rasulo and essentially swapped jobs with him, becoming the chairman of Disney Parks. Staggs took a hard look at the project and recognized that the expansion simply wasn't intelligent use of space. Princess meet and greets shouldn't require this much room, and there weren't enough rides, and also not enough for boys. Boys don't want to wait in line to meet Cinderella as long as they become knights. Who cares? He went back to Imagineering and noticed a pitch for a Snow White-themed minecart coaster. He presented it to his children, all young boys, and they loved it. By the way, if you look at pictures of Tom Staggs and Jay Rasulo, it is so funny. Tom Staggs is basically looks like he is... like Josh D'Amaro to Chapek. It's like almost the same exact thing. Jay Rasulo is this like short, balding man. It's it's like, yeah, he's probably not the right fit for the job, but Rasulo, oh God, looks like the freaking Penguin.
Short, balding little men can be theme park designers too.
Yeah.
Who hold grudges for 10 years and then try to upset the company with a corporate hostile overthrow.
Right. WDI got the green light to make over the meet and greet intense expansion. The middle area with Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella, and Pooh were nixed in favor of this new ride, eventually to be called Seven Dwarves Mine Train. The Disney Fairies franchise was starting to trend downward financially, so Pixie Hollow was also cut, and Dumbo Circus was expanded into Storybook Circus. This helped with cost overruns as they could keep the massive tents from Toontown Fair. The coaster was also reworked into the Great Goofini, allowing for less necessary retheming. So you remember those tents in Mickey's Birthday Land? Well, they were temporary. They were only supposed to last 30 years. Well, it became 30 years in 2018, and they're still up in 2024. So good luck, County Bounty and Pete's Silly Sideshow. entertainment still badly needed a new place for princesses, so it was decided to cut redundancies and close Snow White's Scary Adventures for Princess Fairy Tale Hall, an all-purpose meet and greet location. Because again, we need meet and greets, but it doesn't need to take over everything. This was announced in 2011, delaying the completion of New Fantasyland to 2014. One addition would not be in the new area, but instead a complete renovation of the defunct Skyway Station into a new rest area with bathrooms themed to Tangled. Be Our Guest, Enchanted Tales, Little Mermaid, and Storybook Circus would open in 2012, with Princess Fairy Tale Hall opening in 2013. Finally, New Fantasyland would be complete with the opening of Seven Dwarves Mine Train in 2014. In the end, New Fantasyland resulted in the addition of two new rides with the subtraction of one ride, unless you count the second Dumbo. Was it worth it? Well, you decide. And before you ask, I am not talking about the damn dragon. It was a stunt. They advertised it once, and that was it. So the dragon is not an unbuilt thing. They did it, and there was no more. And they were really scared about drones back then, and for some reason still are right now. So who cares? But what if the original New Fantasyland was built, and you were starting to somewhat defend it? Now,
well, I think
I'm curious to see if you still would be like, yeah, this is a great idea.
So the realization that Tom Staggs had, right? That there's was missing something, that it was missing like a key, probably a really tight attraction to tie it all together, was pretty insightful. The Snow White Mine Train attraction probably made this expansion anything but a disaster, because in its current state, I think it is almost certainly a disaster. It's not the expansion that most people call it, define it as. It's not really an interesting one. The Be Our Guest restaurant is, at best, a really pretty restaurant, but it's overpriced and expensive and not that good. The Ariel attraction, what?
It was all right.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, it's in this weird middle ground where it's both incredibly expensive and also the food is lowest common denominator and boring.
It's the best food in Magic Kingdom. I know that's a low bar, but...
Yes, it's definitely high. It's definitely up there in the Magic Kingdom, which, like you're saying, is a very, very low bar. But then you have Under the Sea, which the attraction itself is okay. The queue is very nice.
Yes.
And then you have the Toontown Fair or the Storybook Circus or whatever, which is, to me, very clearly new coat of paint on Toontown Fair. I don't think it is interesting enough. What isn't the current, like, they're expanding Dumbo, right, again? Or is that, am I wrong?
I don't believe so. I don't think they're adding a third Dumbo.
Or did they add some, the new, what am I thinking about? They add some new sponsor.
That was the Scentsy.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, it's the multi-level marketing thing.
That's right. The marquee. They didn't really change very much of the attraction, if at all. So there you go. A friendly surf. Yes. Fuck this. Anyways, long story short, my point is that without a keystone attraction like the Mine Train, I think New Fantasyland would be looked at as a rather disappointing expansion, because it's, all things considered, it's not very unified. Like, it's very stagnant, segmented, even in its current, its current design. The only reason why I maybe would come to defense of the meet and greets is that I do think that the in a more immersive meet and greet area would be a better use of space than Toontown Fair or Storybook Circus. Like, I think that it was a terrible use of space to not have a roller coaster like this new dark ride quasi coaster Snow White attraction. But when you compare the plans between the original plans and the current build, there really isn't that much different except for Storybook Circus and the Mine Train.
Right. No, you're right. And this is a weird unbuilt attraction where if you're really looking at it, is an expansion where we had, I would have to say, four attractions eliminated for really just one. But do you think it was for the greater good?
Oh, yeah. I mean, sure. Okay. It was totally for the greater good. I think that the one unfortunate loss is Snow White's Scary Adventures, which, like, I do think needed to be... It would be the Snow White's Enchanted Wish now if it
probably
wasn't.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, there's no universe in which that terrifying, even dumbed down, the terrifying ride continues in Fantasyland much longer. But I do think that, like... I do think that the addition of the Mine Train keeps Fantasyland together nowadays. It's like an immovable object, I think, in Magic Kingdom. It's, how could you be there without it? I was thinking in my mind like Splash Mountain, but I didn't mean it like that. I didn't.
Yeah.
But yeah, generally, the one thing I think that is unfortunate is that in this design, the extra attention given to the bigger attraction meant that Storybook Circus had to continue another day.
Yeah. Well, it was always going to really be sucked. There. It just expanded and just the tents took over, like... Essentially, like, well, if we're not going to do Pixie Hollow, we have to save money somehow. Well, this is a good idea. We'll just do a wet play area and just keep the tents and retheme those.
So what was the plan with Dumbo had they done Pixie Hollow?
It was the exact same thing.
I see.
Like, exactly the same. And the coaster was going to be themed to Dumbo.
Right.
But when they turned it into Storybook Circus, they're like, well, can we keep the Goofy theme? Okay, let's slightly retheme it to Goofy again. And so it can kind of say the same name and stuff like that.
It's super lame. The Storybook Circus is super duper lame because I think that the draw, like the new draw, of course, as we've talked about for literally years at this point, the new draw is putting people into specific specific experiences and intellectual property and worlds. Mm-hmm. And I think that having these little, I don't know, these spaces to explore for the meet and greets and or Pixie Hollow would have been a better use of money than Storybook Circus, which is like not quite as much of a hodgepodge as Mickey's Toontown Fair, but Goofy's there.
Yeah.
So, like, insofar that and I'm rambling here and I'll stop it at this, but insofar that the Mine Train is an excellent attraction, obviously this was the better choice. Mm-hmm. But I do wonder what some of the meet and greets would have looked like and how it made it maybe would have diversified a bit of the new Fantasyland area. Yeah. That it isn't just like Ariel, Belle, Snow White, General Circus, Dumbo, Goofy, yada, yada. You know.
Well, what I find interesting is that the Enchanted Forest area, and my sister and my mom kind of remarked when they were strolling through this area that it just feels, it doesn't feel very natural, and it doesn't, everything kind of doesn't flow into each other. And I think that's because this was supposed to be like, instead of three separate areas, and I don't include Storybook Circus, but I don't think Storybook Circus is supposed to be part of the Enchanted Forest. I think the idea is you go beyond the central castle courtyard, you enter the Enchanted Forest, and on the edge of the Enchanted Forest, you come into the circus. That's supposed to be kind of like the idea. But originally, the Enchanted Forest was supposed to be like coming upon like five different magical neighborhoods. You had, you had Belle's France, and you had Ariel's Grotto and Kingdom over here. And then you had Cinderella's little area. And of course, that was just going to be just outside the castle courtyard, which makes sense. Oh, here's just be outside the castle courtyard is Cinderella's house. Of course. And then next to that would be Princess Aurora's area and her little cottage. And then you would have the 100-acre wood. So it would be feel a lot more diversified rather than feeling more random than it actually was. So I think that it had that going for it. The problem, though, is because you would go into this area and again, it would just be there would be a ride connecting all of it, which was Ariel's Undersea Adventure, Journey of the Little Mermaid, whatever the fuck they called it. But it would also be just a bunch of interconnected, immersive meet and greet experiences, which again, I know Tom Staggs is looking at this plan and going, we cannot advertise this entire land all around Little Mermaid because you have to have a ride that has to be the heart of your advertising campaign. The heart of your advertising campaign cannot be look at these kids meeting Cinderella because people will be like, well, yeah, you always could do that. I don't give a, that's what I expect. I am not going to buy a ticket just to go meet Cinderella, but it's in this whole new immersive experience. Fuck, who cares? No, they need a ride. What's the cool ride? And what, they're going to show what, an Omnimover? An Omnimover experience? No. When you think of New Fantasyland, what is at the heart of every single advertisement?
Yeah.
It's the, Seven Dwarfs. It's the
Mine Train.
Yep, it's Mine Train. That's it. That's what it is. You need that hook. He knew you needed that hook. It doesn't matter what the Imagineers have cooked up. Well, this would be really cool. And we're actually playtesting. And who cares? You needed that. It had to happen. It needed to happen to anchor it. And unfortunately, I think, to be honest, this should have been three rides. It should have been the Beauty and the Beast ride from Tokyo, Ariel's Undersea Adventure, and as well as Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. I don't care about what happens in Storybook Circus. That's fine. But it should have been three rides. That would, I honestly think, blow people away. But for now, it kind of makes people a little, because let's think about the Beauty and the Beast area. What does it consist of? It consists of this immersive meet and greet, which you said you've done it.
Yes, many years around when New Fantasyland opened. Yes, I've done it.
Okay, yeah. I've never done it, but of course, you know, the effects of it are very well, right. You know, documented, but few people do it because it is a small experience that is mostly tailored to little children and not many people do it. Okay. And then you have the Be Our Guest restaurant, which is extremely popular. Don't get me wrong. Extremely popular. But people would have blown their tops if it was this trackless teacup dark ride with all these amazing effects. That would have made this expansion an insane success rather than just kind of successful. And I know Mine Train gets insane lines. I don't know. I mean, we did it this last trip. My mom and sister, they loved it. They adored it. But I think if they would be less critical of New Fantasyland overall if it had that Beauty and the Beast attraction. I honestly think that's the missing component. And
yeah, you're right. It's missing. Well, for one, I think it's missing like the original intention, like you're saying, almost being like walking through a very disconnected hodgepodge of like lands, almost like Fantasy Springs, actually.
Well, that's the idea. Yeah, it's the idea of the forest. Like you're encountering different things. Sense. And well, that's the thing. Think of Fantasy Springs, which is about to open in Tokyo. What is it? It's three lands. Okay. Three lands, and each has a mind blowing dark ride. That's what they are selling this expansion on. I do not even know if I will be able to get into it. Have you heard about the complications, the complicated things to get into the land?
No, is there like a process that you have to go through?
There's like, okay, so there's like numerous tiers. Okay, so there's the Fantasy Springs Hotel tier, which is like, if you're insane enough to spend all this yen, you get like guaranteed access into the land, but not onto the rides. Okay, but guaranteed access to the land. And then if you're a hotel guest, you get like early access to get into the park 15 minutes early to get into the land because the land is using a reservation system. And then you finally get the peons who go in and then you have to see if you can pay to do it. If you can't pay to do it, then you have to see if you can get a standby pass just to get into the land. Never mind the rides, which there are four, and those do not have a fast pass. They only have one fast pass, and that's for the guests of the hotel, who, again, are guaranteed access in the land, but they are not guaranteed access onto the rides unless they pay for an extra pass, which is like, I think, equivalent to like $150 USD. And they pay for that, and that gets them on every ride as much as they possibly like through the fast pass lane. That is how complicated it is to get into Fantasy Springs. Now, I'm going about a few months after it opens, so we'll see if I get into it. But the only reason why it is so bonkers is because, again, three massive dark rides.
Right.
And one, like, I guess it's like a knockoff of Heimlich Choo Choo Train. And again, do you know what that is based off of? The little kid ride? What it's themed after? It's something we discussed.
Is it Beauty and the Beast?
No.
No, 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 no. It wouldn't be. It's, shit.
It's something we just discussed.
I know.
And we were like, why doesn't this have a ride? Wish it would have a ride. And I have no clue. It was Pixie. It's Pixie Hollow.
Oh,
they're actually building Pixie Hollow with a ride. I think it's called like Tink's Baby Buggy Adventure or something like that. And it's like intended for little children, but you go on this like Heimlich Choo Choo Train type ride and go through the different seasons in Pixie Hollow. And
if you're viewing this like whole thing from the context of the overseas expansion, specifically in Tokyo, I can understand then that this meet and greet idea, the initial one, is a uniquely American problem.
Yeah.
Where there's no money put into it. There's no effort. And you're right. Think about this expansion could better be used for a multiple dark ride new expansion with multiple lands, multiple different experiences. Even in its current state, I think it's a weak expansion. Because let alone, like, you know, Pandora has two attractions, an e-ticket, of course, and then a dark ride, which I went on again, and I've warmed up to even more than I was before.
The River Journey or?
Yeah. Yeah, the River Journey.
Yeah.
I mean, I went on both because I am a coward and paid for Lightning Lane. But basically, I think that the new Fantasyland expansion lacks any cohesion. And like you're saying, I mean, I actually do wonder what Americans would react to the Beauty and the Beast attraction. It's very weird and it's very atypical. It's very cool. And I think people would like it. But it is not normal. Like, true. It's very...
The pacing's weird. I know.
The pacing is weird from, I think, like, if you're more prone to fast, high-speed, conflict-oriented attractions, like we need to get from point A to point B, you spend a lot of time in the Beauty and the Beast ride dancing.
Right.
And, like, it's really, really cool and really, really emotional. But also, Americans are stupid. But for what it's worth, I do think you have a very good point here that the current New Fantasyland could use more dark rides. It could use more expansion. What this then kind of highlights to us is that the only thing holding New Fantasyland together is the big themed coaster. And more importantly, if you're going to design an expansion, you have to do it around... I hesitate to use the word weenie because annoying people use it all the time to say stupid things. But it's a true tenet of design. You have to have like some center quality and expand from there. And the center quality can't be the only thing that's in the area. Like it can't be... We know now in our current life, the only thing in this area can't be the roller coaster. It still feels barren. Guests are still going to be kind of confused while you're jumping from place to place. But imagine if it wasn't there. That's even worse. Then you might as well be opening like a meet and greet building in downtown Disney. Like it's like, what's the difference between this and the former ESPN Zone housing meet and greets?
And I don't think like, oh, but when you go in here, you can see this really cool, you know, Pepper's Ghost effect of Cinderella. It doesn't matter because so few guests actually care about that because it's not like you're in, again, Princess Fairy Tale Hall, which has been made to have multiple, you know, princesses. So, you know, it's like, boom, boom, boom. Okay, cool. Perfect. We can get the line going out faster. Instead, it's like, you have to go into this room now. Now you're going to go into this room. Now you're going to experience this experience. And people have less patience for that or even understand what that is. And the reason why you don't see that many people talking about Enchanted Tales with Belle is because of exactly that. It's very hard to explain. It's very hard to wrap around, you know, their heads. So the fact that they thought that they were going to advertise about this and also go, this is our major expansion. It's just meet and greets. So many meet and greets. It just misses the mark. It's completely looking at the synergy, looking at the money sold, and not understanding you will always make that money. But if you make rides, people will enjoy it and they will be more enticed to buy merch. It, you know, yes, people will wait in really long lines to meet princesses, but, and this is something we didn't bring up, that is why Disneyland, just in the middle of this, took their old swing dancing carnation dance floor area and turned it into Fantasy Fair with a little nook to go and meet a bunch of princesses. And they just put it alongside there, tucked in the corner. And that's why they did it with Princess Fairy Tale Hall. And it worked. Tucked into the little corner, and you could tell that this was all disrupted because if they knew they were going to eventually go to that route, they wouldn't have done Enchanted Tales with Belle. It was just so far along the process that they couldn't put the brakes onto it. So they would have realized, wait a second, we don't have to revolve the entire experience around meeting a princess. We could have the meet and greet over siphoned off into one area and then turn this into something everybody would enjoy, a ride, which is why people come to theme parks. That is always why people come to theme parks. Everything else is gravy. And that's what Walt Disney Imagineering at this time, or at least the high brass of Walt Disney Imagineering, wasn't truly understanding. You're making so much money on this princess merch, but that doesn't mean you have to divert your intention to just going after it so hard that you miss the point of your theme parks. And that is what's astounding about this expansion, is that how much they screwed it up. And that's my rant.
I have very little to echo beyond that, besides that I think you've actually set up a really good episode today, starting with Disneyland Forward, where there's no attractions announced.
Until D23, right? Because they're totally going to
another AI. And they'll be like, what if we announced our brand? Oh, I don't really know what the fuck they could announce at this point. They could just start throwing ideas out there.
Did you
see? That's gotta be fraud, right? Like, you can't just announce to get your share price up bullshit and never build it. Like, that can't possibly be legal.
Well, they have to build something. That's an agreement. So, did you see the PowerPoints that leaked from Disneyland Forward? And it's like, imagine the possibilities. And one has World of Frozen, and the other thing has Zootopia Land. And then in the right hand corner, it says Star Wars Rise of the Resistance. And I already tweeted this out. I'm like, wow, could you imagine if Star Wars Rise of the Resistance was at Disneyland? Wow, I can't even fathom it. Like, who was putting this together? Are they even familiar with what's in Disneyland? I was like, what? I guess we already have it, but thank you.
It basically, I do really think that I'm looking at the expansions right there. $1.9 billion minimum investment on new theme park lodging and lodging, new theme parks and lodging experience, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, bullshit. Anyways, we'll see what happens. Like, I think that, you know, this kind of game is very tough, because when we talk about things like entertainment, but if you step into the business shoes for a second, a lot of this is an optics game, especially in a space that takes so long. Like, once you commit to a plan, that plan's in stone for 10 to 15 years, building for many years, and then you deal with you can't like redo it very quickly, lest you really fuck up. Then you need to redo it really quickly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, when it comes to bookend, like everything kind of we're talking about here, in the current plans for Disneyland moving forward, for Walt Disney World moving forward, for the Disney company moving forward, you have, of course, like this hostile bid with Jay Rasulo as a part of it. And if you want to see like his business expertise, you can look at this project, which fucking sucks. And... you know, it, like, I don't mean to be, the people who are really obsessive about either side are really weird, because I don't care. It's a hostile bid for a company. Not really, it's nothing to do with the art, but just looking at the track record, this idea is kind of bad. And the development that followed it was much better. But it's also important to like step back and say, you know, as Disneyland expands, as the Magic Kingdom expands, what are the intentions? What are they actually delivering on? And are the plans actually going to go anywhere? Or is this like a PR game?
Yeah.
I suppose no matter what happens, no matter what they build, at least it's better than 5 meet and greets.
Yes. And can you imagine today where little children are making, I mean, how we even barely approach the question of what if? Like, what if this was made? I think that it would be gone. They would have replaced it with something new. Because can you imagine in 2024, little girls, you know, lining up to make birthday cards for Princess Aurora? I mean,
that is very weird.
To quote a very angry video game nerd, what were they thinking? Like, oh my God, this is an absurd proposal for a major attraction. And people would be like, why isn't there a ride here? Demolish this shit. So that's what I guess I would say for a what if. I think eventually this would have happened. This all would have happened because nobody cares about it. So build it or not, I say no. No, 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 no. I'm guessing you would
maybe say I think you could take some things from these ideas. Like, you could take some of the immersive meet and greets. I think that they have a place in these theme parks, like the Savi's lightsaber thing.
Yes, but it's like how a very small, similar kind of thing. How small is Savi's
lightsaber? Exactly. It's that very this small. Idea. An entire, imagine if Galaxy's Edge was only Savi's stuff. You can actually almost feel like the tantalizing. Remember, what was that park? What, the shitty fake theme park that never got built? Evermore?
Evermore, that did get built. It did get built. Yeah, it's not an episode for a reason. It did get built. It is not built anymore. It is gone. Yeah.
But I think
you were saying, let's go back. Did you say an entire Galaxy's Edge themed to Oga's Cantina?
Or
just like all of Savvy's workshop, right? Like, It's just
if it was all just a bunch of these little tiny experiences.
Yeah, like could you imagine that if you put it in a small experience? And I don't know, what if, just ballparking here, what if you did that, and but you only like had like so many people, and it's like really boutique, and oh, you know what if it's like over the course of days, and so you build a hotel attached to it and people sleep there? But I mean, in order to do this, you would have to charge top dollar for this. So I don't know. $3,000? $3,000. I think that sounds good. I don't think they would charge more than that, would they? I don't think so, right? But yeah, I think we've proven why this is a bad idea. The Disney company has already proven it.
Don't build it.
Yeah, don't build it.
Don't build it. There, I give you my vote.
No. Well, that was our voyage into Fantasyland. As we return to Disney for this episode of Unbuilt. We'll reach back to everybody else to see how Disneyland Forward goes, and then I will reach back to see if I get into Fantasy Springs later on this year. But for now, in the meantime, please follow us on social media and Twitter at Unbuilt Pod. You can reach me at Open Mother's Mail and Ryan Dorman at Open the Dorman. Feel free to email us at unbuiltpod@gmail.com or read us wherever you find this podcast. Please write a review. Tell us how we're doing. And if you don't like us, thank you for listening to Addicted to the Mouse. I'm Dan Lowry. See you guys.
See ya.